Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to IDVAC Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community, in collaboration with the Women of Color Network and the African American Domestic Peace Project. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio is made possible by a grant from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Administration for Children and Families, Family and Youth Services Bureau, and Family Violence Prevention and Services Program. Now, points of view expressed in this program do not necessarily represent the official positions or policies of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio brings you rich conversations and education on issues surrounding domestic violence in African American and African communities.
This is Dr. Oliver Williams. I'm going to be hosting the show tonight, and we're going to be talking about the issues of domestic violence and faith. Ms. Joanne Brown. Ms. Brown, want to hear from you. And can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself? And I know you're with Greater Grace Temple and you work with Ms. LaDonna Combs. Could you introduce yourself a little bit? Okay.
I sure will. Yes. My name is Minister Joanne Brown. I am a member of Greater Grace Temple of the Apostolic Faith. My pastor is Bishop Charles Ellis III. And the director I'm up under is Sister LaDonna Combs. And we have a ministry that is Sister Against Abuse Ministry. And I am a minister at Greater Grace. I have 4 kids and 7 grandchildren. And I work in different ministries. I work in the Sisters Against Abuse Ministry. I work in the prison ministry. I work in a lot of outreach ministry.
Mm-hmm. And also joining us is Dr. Pat Davenport, who's with, and Dr. Davenport, could you introduce yourself?
Okay, I'm Patricia Davenport. I'm the Executive Director of Our House Incorporated, based in Greenville, Mississippi, serving 9 rural communities in the Mississippi Delta. And our agency has a domestic violence shelter, rape crisis program, a batterers program, survivor homicide program, and a behavior modification program. And this is actually coming up on our 20th year anniversary. We're a nonprofit organization.
Wow. Yeah, I know both of them do great work. I've seen some of the things that they've done, and they're both partners in the Speaking of Faith project that we're trying to work with, but they all also operate, you know, from churches as well. So, Pat, could you talk about yourself and Bishop Mitchell and the church that you do some of your work with in collaboration with Our House?
Well, basically, I guess if we go back to the beginning, Our House Incorporated was founded by Bishop Roderick Mitchell with New Life Church, Dr. Pastor Thomas Paul Williams with Agape Storge Christian Center, Judge Margaret McCray, Denise Strew, Doris Lee, and myself. The principle behind why we actually started our agency was to enhance the prevention programs within our community in regards to domestic violence. But we also wanted to add a component to our agency that's spiritual-based. So one of the things we have done is in the majority of our programs is added a spiritual component that's on a volunteer basis. So victims or batterers, any consumer of our services is able to come on board and provide a service to them on a spiritual level. And one of the things we also did was we decided to involve faith-based leaders from our community in our program. So when we first started our agency, we started it with two programs, a survivor homicide program primarily because over 67% of the domestic violence murders in our community were domestic violence at that time. Another program was MASH, which is the name of the batterers group that Bishop Mitchell created called Men Against Spousal Harm. And this particular program, we did get training from the Duluth, Minnesota model, which at that particular time was the approved model for the Office of Justice. But we adapted theirs, one, to be cultural specific within our area to serve Afro-Americans, and two, to add a spiritual component onto the program and an additional chapter into the training in regards to working with men. We firmly believed in our agency that in order to end violence in our community, that we had to work with the entire family, and that included the offender, the victim, and the children. And the best place for us to reach and acknowledge and put the publicity out was in the faith community, because generally in the South, one of the number one places that a victim will go to for help is the church. And so Bishop Roderick Mitchell, he's also a survivor of domestic violence, and he has openly come out and shared his story with the public, with the faith community, and with his congregation on a regular basis. His church, actually, was the first church that opened up a rape crisis center in the Mississippi Delta over 2 years ago, and he continued to offer training. And in addition to that, he believed that not only training for himself, because you can have the biblical training, but one level he does understand is that before you could work on the spiritual side with a victim, you got to first look at her safety, because she will hear absolutely nothing you say spiritually if she's worried and concerned about her safety. So in acknowledging that, one of the factors that he put together was to allow our house, which was separate but yet teamwork with the church, that we came in and provided the secular types of social work, advocacy, and trauma-informed care for his ministers and lay people and leaders in a three-part series. We did that, and so instead of Bible class, we had these classes to help them understand the dynamics of victimization, how to get help, and that it's okay to call for somebody outside of the church. So that's really kind of how we started and what our beginning was.
Yeah. Pat, I appreciate your comment. And the thing that I was curious about with Joanne is, Joanne, how did you start your program with LaDonna in the church?
Okay. All right. Our pastor, Bishop Charles Ellis, started, LaDonna went with him about the problems that was going on in domestic violence with women inside of the church. So he told her to start a ministry there. And so how I got involved was I wanted to go see, because I came out of a domestic violence experience starting back to my childhood. And so I was very interested in it. So I just started going to the meetings. And so Sister LaDonna had brought it there to our church. And so that's how I began to get involved. Hello? Hello? Hello?
Yeah, I can
still hear you.
And so,
okay. that's how I began
really
to get involved.
Important work that you all did in terms of trying to pull that together. The other thing that I thought was sort of interesting is the involvement of the First Lady, as well as Bishop Ellis in terms of trying to work and creating things for you with regard to your project. So as you dealt with things, it's interesting, what are the different elements, Joanne, that you use in terms of the different focuses that you have? So
the
what types of services do you offer one?
Well, we offer to help outreach women. Some of the components that we use is going to court with women. Sometimes we have to kind of work with them back and forth in the court system, being there with the women, just say they have to go to the court, they have to go and get a PTO or helping them to find housing, to go with them to court when it comes to that, or providing monies or clothing or housing for them. First Lady Chrisette Ellis, which worked with the PWP, with women inside of the church, another ministry, and she began to come to Sister Lanana about some of the women coming to her that was being abused. And so we kind of provide shelter for them, a home. We provide other little components for them. And then when the ministry started, it was giving the women a safe place to come outside of the big part of the church and talk personally, one-on-one. And that's how we begin to help the women and to give them more knowledge.
What's interesting to me in both situations is the fact that some people have told me that, you know, you shouldn't provide support for victims and programming in churches for victims of domestic violence. Yet both you and Pat and Bishop Mitchell and Bishop Ellis, you all have, and Minister LaDonna, you all have programs in your church. What encouraged you to take that on rather than just doing educations or sermons? And I'm curious about that. Either one of you can.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, she can go. Yes.
Okay, then. Okay. I guess what really set the tone was with Bishop being a survivor of domestic violence, he didn't want anyone else to go through what he had gone through. And his example and his testimony has helped not only victims, but offenders also in breaking this cycle. Because we all have to be honest about the problem and realize that if you're just dealing with one part of it and you're not dealing with the other part, it's going to continue to grow. And what his mission is his mission is to save souls. And so to do that, they have to be able to hear him. So in order for his congregation to hear him, he has to hear what they need also, which means their safety. He has to be open to what's going to happen to the individuals in his church. We had an altar call one time at church, and he said everyone who's been affected by domestic violence or knows someone who's been affected by domestic violence or have been exposed to it on different levels, such as a survivor of a homicide act, come to the altar. We had, I believe on that particular day, we had 98% of our congregation come to the altar. He like, okay, this is an issue that needs to be dealt with, and it needs to be dealt with honestly, and it needs to be dealt with straightforward, and it don't need to be something that's on the back burner. Because I have hurting people in my congregation that needs healing. And so one of the ways to start the healing was to develop a program. And so that's one of the reasons why he started it, is because he really felt there was a need based on his congregation for healing.
I want to hear from you, Joanne, but one of the questions that I have too is, you know, that how come you all didn't direct them to sort of traditional domestic violence services? So, Pat, well, I know with what you do is that it's a collaboration in terms of, the, as Bishop says, the secular and the spiritual, meaning secular program, because you receive referrals from the court, you receive people who come from various different counties to come and utilize your program, but you're also so connected with the church too. And like you said, you know, it was founded collaboratively. But, you know, the thing that I'm wondering, so you are a traditional program, but you also have clearly a faith component and it's integrated. I guess my curiosity is how come, you know, it was connected in such a way, and Joanne, I'm interested in hearing from you, rather than just referring them out to traditional domestic violence programs.
There was no other traditional domestic violence program in the entire Mississippi Delta. So that right there was telling you that there was a need. So there wasn't one. In the state of Mississippi, we have 92 counties and only 13 shelters. And in our particular area where we're at, there was no one providing that type of service. So on a nonprofit direction, we stepped in because actually the federal government came in as well as the state and asked us, because of my prior experience, I had been working in the field of domestic violence for 30 years, and before we had started our house, I had been working for 12 years, so I had the experience in working with nonprofits and domestic violence and sexual assault victims, and it was just a blessing and a wonderful partnership or collaboration that we was able to do this, and it's step forth because, like I say, in there was no, literally, no one providing shelter care or domestic violence prevention care in our community, which out of the nine counties, the majority of the Afro-Americans within the state of Mississippi reside in those nine counties out of the entire state. So our population is primarily average about 72 to 87% Afro-American within our community. So we were addressing the need.
And why did you all bring a program in-house when you also have people who are members of your church who participate and are involved in law enforcement and have some sensibilities about this? But I'm sort of curious, why did you all decide to bring it into the church rather than only referring people to traditional sort of domestic violence organizations in the Detroit area?
Okay. Well, we decided, and from LaDonna working on the outside in the domestic violence, we didn't have it in-house in the church. And so they had to bring it, ways to find out how to bring it in-house in the ministry, because so many families goes to the church, and that's where you got a hand-on-hand. So Bishop Ellis, well, First Lady Chrisette Ellis, had a situation, a lady came to her that had been abused, and that's when she began to recognize that there are people in-house that need this ministry inside of a church, because there are women that may be, even though they're law enforcement, they knows about it, but it's something about bringing it in the church that you can get a hand-on-hand with individual that may not seek to go traditional outside. And then it's a spiritual base to it, because they come there to hear the word, where the word could comfort them. And so First Lady and Minister LaDonna began to say, you know, we need to have a component inside of the church. So when women come in, or even men, because men need to know more about domestic violence, why they do it. You know, why am I acting out like this? And so we bring it to the men and the women because we find out the men need to be educated, whereas instead of covering it, and so many times what I find out, in the church, it was a hush-hush thing. You're not supposed to talk about it. But you got not only women, but men, and you have their children. So many kids come in that maybe witness abuse that night, and teenagers come in. So you got everybody inside of the church. So why not speak to the whole body, like the family? And so that's a concern. From the church view, that was a concern that they needed to address because people needed help. And sometimes you have to take people out the big picture and put them in a small where they can feel safe, where they don't have to, you know, because in our ministry, we don't talk about it outside because they can talk, they feel safe about talking about what's going in their home. And so that's why we began to bring it, Bishop began to say, well, we need this ministry on the inside of the church. So where they may come Sunday morning to the service and they'll leave right out. But if they know that there's a ministry that would deal with them on one-to-one basis, then a lot of women come because, well, I can talk to someone that's knowledgeable about the abuse, that you can speak to them in a spiritual way to them. And spiritually, that's a part of the whole body. So not only mentally, emotionally, but you can talk to them physically, but mentally, emotionally. And a lot of times, a lot of women go through verbal abuse, mental abuse,
right,
which is worse than the physical abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So they
now,
need to know
women
that somebody
say
cares.
That over the, yeah. And I've heard women say that over the years, that the even though the physical abuse can be really bad, I've heard women say that the emotional abuse can be, you know, so much worse. And a question that I have for you is that it's so interesting to me that you have ways that you engage in terms of having the conversation, and that you, that individually, I mean, so at the time, you know, LaDonna didn't know Pat or Bishop Mitchell, and Bishop Ellis didn't know Bishop Mitchell, and you all started this work independently, and so it's interesting to me that you all decided to do that when there's so many myths that exist within the church, you know, about you know, about domestic violence organizations breaking up families. And rather than looking at the abuser's behavior as the thing that breaks up families. And also there have been these, you know, historic discussions about, you know, the issue of domestic violence in churches in the field, where there wasn't a lot of trust for churches and ministers within the field for good reasons for a long time. But you all are turning this around along with some of the other partners that we've had, and also people like Reverend Marie Fortune and Anna Marie, that's also in two different parts of the country, one in Seattle and one in Boston, with their organizations, with Safe Havens and with Faith Trust. But also with African Americans doing work on the ground, we know that there's a Reverend Al Miles, who's in Hawaii, who's been doing this work for quite a while, and that we know that there are a lot of churches within the United States who are doing a lot of this work. But you all have really, I think, done so much in terms of you know, breaking the patterns and the beliefs that people have around this issue, and that you found ways to make collaborations with different organizations and systems, whether it's court systems, whether it's police departments, whether it's clinical practitioners, whether but also bringing some of those things within your own organization for, you know, Greater Grace having a shelter program. And then in New Life and Our House, being connected with each other so you work collaboratively with one another as well as, you know, with the various systems that exist. So I'm curious about your training. Pat, you talked about the fact that you went to Duluth and were trained with the Duluth approach. But I'm curious about the additional things that you all do to train your people in your ministry. But I'm also curious about the adaptations that you've had to make to your work. And then, Joanne, I'd like to hear from you about that, too. And then, Fatima, if we have any callers that have any questions, then after we hear from Pat and after we hear from Joanne, then I'd like to go to the line.
Well, basically, one of the things that we found was important was our agency, Our House, is not based in the church. We have a different site in a different county, actually, because we serve so many counties. What we have when we do set aside is we do faith-based training, but one of the things that Bishop Mitchell has shared with us is that you have to understand the denomination that you're going into. So by us being a standalone on the side, we are able to offer services to everyone within, no matter what your denomination, Baptist, Catholic, Muslim, you know, we're there to provide it. And when they come to us, we started a collaboration and training with ministers within our community on domestic violence that we actually host ourselves so that everyone's on one accord. No matter where, no matter what your denomination, what your approach is, our number one goal is safety. And that's a key thing that we train. And then also we provide training on an annual basis. We provide two or three conferences a year, and we open it up because we also target social workers and counselors as well as law enforcement and school personnel, because the best way to reach the church is through their congregation. So many of the individuals who come to our trainings are Christians. And so we're given an opportunity while we're providing training to educate them on a basic national statistics, local statistics, you know. We provide that for them so that they would know we're not alone in this part of the world, that what's happening here in our community, in our state, is also happening on a national level. And so this is a danger that we need to put a stop to, is domestic violence. So we go into the schools, we provide training for not only for the teachers, but we also have a youth group called WAVE, Working Against Violence Anywhere, and that group is 13 through 24, and they are peer specialists that we have trained on the different aspects of domestic violence, stalking, and dating violence, and we allow them to train other students, to educate other students, so it's a peer-to-peer educational training. When we go into a church, we involved whoever's the leader in there. We first educate them and work with them so that they could be the teachers and the leaders within their own congregation and their own denomination. So we're here, our agency, to empower other people to do what we do and to reach out to the larger audience by multiplying our knowledge with their knowledge. And that's why we do our trainings and we videotape them and we host them and do television shows. And in regards to some of our training material, we utilize training material provided by the Office of Justice, the Department of Human Services, CDC, SAMHSA. But what we normally do is we review it, and if we're targeting youth, we bring it to our committee of youth and ask them to review this to see if it's appropriate culturally, language, to just really basically review it for sensitivity as well. if I'm going to do a training for a church, then I'm going to call up Dr. Thomas Paul Williams or Bishop Mitchell, and I'm going to say, can you review this material to make sure it's appropriate? Because I'm going into a new area that I'm not familiar with. And when we're dealing with scripture training in regards to what the Bible means, we always send a pastor in. We actually have about 9 or 11 pastors who have gone through the 40-hour training with our agency, and they're able to now go out and educate other pastors. And all of the material that they utilize is material we have obtained from either the Justice Department or the National Coalition or the State Coalition that we just review and adapt it to our community. And then sometimes we have to adapt it to the mere fact that it's not culturally sensitive to Afro-Americans. Some of the language, they may give examples about elevators. In our area, we don't have elevators in the majority of our buildings. Escalators are non-existent in the Mississippi Delta. So, you know, those kind of little sensitive things is very important when you're doing with training. And being respectful when you go into the churches, knowing that whether or not you need to go in the pulpit or are you going to be on the floor, if you should dress in pants or you should dress in dresses when you go to the church, those are things that's informative that we go to Bishop or Pastor Thomas Paul Williams because they're on our board, and we say, hey, you know about this denomination, this congregation. What is our best approach? How do we train them? When we go in there, we don't want to offend their religious culture at all. So with us being a set aside and not really being based in the church, when people come, they're not coming thinking, well, it's just non-denominational at all. When they come to the agency, it's open for all religious faiths. And that's a key important thing that we wanted to direct, because we are uniform all up under God as we understand him. So that's something that we do.
Any comment about? Oh, yes, I was going to make a comment that we also, right now, we are dealing with the black, African-American, black culture, bringing in pastors of other beliefs into our church to educate them. Even so, in our own ministry culture, you know, denomination, we bring in pastors. What we are finding out that a lot of in the church pastors, they have an address in the way that they need to know. So we have brought in law, Sister LaDonna have brought in law enforcement and also ministers. And in our church, the setting was where we have Sunday school at. We had, last Sunday, instead of having Sunday school, Sister LaDonna just brought in law enforcement, other ones that participate in the abuse. We bring it in so when everybody is sitting there, then they can hear from each and everyone, and we find out that the lack of knowledge, well, a lot of people don't, ministers or pastors have not dealt with it in the way that they're bringing it in. So it's about giving them more knowledge and understanding about how to deal with this situation inside of your church, or that it's okay, because a lot of people comes to other churches. They may not have that ministry, that pastor may not have that ministry in his church, because he may not know how to deal with it in a way that it would be helpful to his whole congregation. So what we does is bring them in and teach them how to, well, give them information about how they can interject this in their church and become a ministry in their church so they can help on a more one-to-one basis, how pastors can deal with people on a one-to-one basis. Because sometimes mm-hmm. people come to church, the pastor
yeah.
may not can talk to them like then, but if he
mm-hmm.
have a ministry there that they can go to, then they're what I find out, they're more likely to come to that ministry because
yeah.
they don't want to talk, you know, amongst everybody. But if you give people
mm-hmm.
the information on a wide basis, then once they find out that there is a component inside of the church that they can, then they will come to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have ministers that are being taught how to handle this and where to direct those that need the help from. And
yeah,
what
and
is
I,
the
I've
difference?
Seen, I've seen that happen at your church, Joanne, but I've also seen it in terms of teaching people and doing regular trainings associated with that. But I've also seen it at New Life. And Pat, can you say something about that? And then Fatima, we're going to take some questions if there are some.
Are you talking about the training in New Life? Or are you talking about victims receiving services?
No,
well,
I'm talking
Mr.
about
Mitchell
the training
is,
that you do with the lay people.
Oh,
lay
okay. The training that we do to lay people, we normally host the training to lay people outside of the church. Law enforcement, we normally do it at the academy. Social workers, we'll do it at a convention center in their own comfort zone. But one of the other training that we have, and I think is very important, is Bishop Mitchell is also the president and founder of Exodus School of the Bible, which is a accredited bachelor and master level school. And in that particular school, anyone, in order to receive a degree on a master level, must receive 4 semesters of victimology, which is the first semester is on domestic violence, the second is on elderly abuse and child abuse, and the third is on sexual assault, and the fourth is on crisis intervention and suicide prevention, all related to victimization, with the root of it being domestic violence and the collaboration. So all master-level students who attend Exodus School of the Bible up under the leadership of Bishop Mitchell must receive those 4 semesters. I am one of the teachers there as well. So I thought that was important that in his biblical studies and education and training, that as he founded this, because I think it's going on its 10th or 11th year now, that he incorporated that into the curriculum from the very beginning, because he did want that. And we have pastors as well as ministers and lay people who attend these classes, and I thought that was remarkable. Now, that does happen at the church. Now, the social work conference, we just recently had one that was for social workers and faith-based leaders together called Speaking of Faith, which is a piggyback on the video that the Institute had produced. And we had national speakers come in, but we also offered social workers hours and law enforcement training hours to encourage them to come to the training to receive the information that they needed. And in some incidents, for example, in October, we did 22 events within the community. October's Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Two of them was for law enforcement, and we actually went to their department and provided training for them on-site at the police department in 4-hour shifts. And we partnered with the Attorney General's office, the local judge, as well as the chief of police, and then our house as victimization, and we all came together and did 4-hour training in the morning and repeated it in the afternoon. And we do that for each police department because it's difficult for overtime for them. For the social workers, that's when we do our annual conferences once again. For the school personnel, we bring in the principals, the assistant principals, and the counselors. And what we do is I deal with the trauma-informed component on there, but we actually have survivors of domestic violence, youth survivors, who come in and role play and show to the counselors and the administrator why a child may not be paying attention. It's not because they're a bad child or disruptive, but the fact of the matter is you don't know what happened last night in their home. You don't know what happened when they were on their way to school. You don't know what their mother looked like or their father, because men could be victims as well. And you don't understand why they're staring out in space and what they're thinking about, because this could have happened all last night. And we let the children demonstrate that, and it has a major impact on the school personnel. And then we come back and give the theory. We give the educational theory and the other necessary dynamics that they need in regards to that. So our training is broad, but very much specified based by audience on what we do and how we handle it.
Well, I want to remind the callers, if you have a question, then you should press 1. And then we will be able to take your questions on air, and you can ask the questions of Pat and Joanne, and we can try to respond to you if you have any questions. I see a lot of callers that are on the switchboard, so we will do that. And what I want to do is to Pat, do you have any questions of Joanne, or Joanne, do you have any questions of Pat in terms of the work that you do? And then after you may respond to that, then I have a question about what have you all noticed are the myths that the field has about faith community and the faith community has about the domestic violence community, if you've noticed that over the years.
I have a question. I know what we do in our church, but what is your policy and procedure in your church when one of the leaders is discovered to be an offender? Are they still in leadership? Do they go in training? What's your policy?
Okay. Our policy in our church, if that is the case, that's why they are bringing more. Minister LaDonna is bringing more knowledge about it. If there is found out to be someone in our church in the leadership front, pastor have a conference with them or direct them to Minister LaDonna, if that is the case. I know Bishop talks to them first. And then they bring them together, Minister LaDonna and Bishop, and then they incorporate them into about the understanding about abuse. And that's what I've seen that has happened, that Bishop talks to him first, and then he brings her in, Minister LaDonna, and then they on a basis, they get together, and then they would talk to that minister. And then they become like, okay, we're going to keep, and Bishop keeps an update on the progress of this minister. It depends on, you know, what is the case, what is happening in that family. So we first have to go to our bishop, and then he's the one get LaDonna involved, and then the different other components that they need to help this family with, if that's the case. Hello?
Yes, I'm still here.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, that has been the case that I found out, that, you know, Minister LaDonna begins to be involved in that situation. And that's been my... That's been my response.
Joanne, do you have any questions of Pat?
No, I liked everything she said. how they are starting in, you know, in that part of the country. So I don't have any. I just liked everything that she brought forth in that area.
Well, one of the things that I'm curious about is whether or not you all have heard any myths, either from the domestic violence community or from the faith community about the domestic violence community. And if so, how have you all worked through that?
I guess one of the myths would be, well, I don't know if you really want to call it a myth, but to me, it is if you don't understand the definition of forgiveness, and that a victim should immediately forgive the batterer and pray for them. I consider that a myth because that's not enough that needs to be done. And number one, there's never an explanation that goes with what forgiveness is, because forgiveness is not for the other person. It's for that individual that needs it. Say, if I needed to forgive you or anything like that, the forgiveness is not for you, it's for me. So defining that and educating that. And then also another myth is that everyone who's in leadership in the faith-based community, they themselves, not every one of them are in a harmonious relationship. There are batterers standing in the pulpit, too. So you can't believe that because a person is a man of God or a leader or a deacon, that he's immune to the power and control need that may be within him, that there needs to be education there, and it needs to be taught. And once again, I don't want to consider this a myth, because I do believe prayer answers everything, but I also believe that in the domestic violence community that you can pray, but you also need to be safe while you're praying. So you need
right.
to become aware of what's happening around you, because I firmly believe that God is in control, but God also gave us choices, and we have the choice
yeah.
to do different things, and one of our choices is to be safe. And so we should
That's
acknowledge
right.
that as well. So I think those are some of the myths I deal with kind of regularly. Or the myths
that
some of the victims have, that they should carry this burden and remain in there because of Jesus on the cross. You really have to sit down and define that, or help them come to the point to understand what it means to bear the cross, and that it's a volunteer position, and they're battering, they're not in that volunteer position. This is something that was forced on them. So I
right.
just think there needs to be some clarity, and to me those were some of the areas.
Well, what I noticed with both your churches is the fact that you have policies that everybody in the church, from the pastors to the members of the church, have to follow. And with regard to their behaviors and such. And the other thing is the fact that the court is not always your enemy, or that,
no.
When you, a person does domestic violence, you don't go in and act as a character witness for that person. They have to be challenged by the law, because men who batter may say that they want to change, but they don't know how to change. And somebody needs to observe and supervise. And safety is something that's real important for the victim. And it may require that the man who does the abuse needs to go to another church until he's at a place where he can be restored. But we've got probably about 12 minutes left on the show. And we've got a caller. Norma, you have a question?
Yes, I do.
What is your question?
How do you get a teenager to open up and talk to you if they're being abused in school, whether it's physical or verbal?
Could you repeat that question, please?
How do you get a teenager to open up and talk to you if they're being abused in school, whether it's physical or verbal?
I couldn't make that out. Maybe you could, Fatima, could you get the question? And then share it on the line, please.
I think she was saying, how do you help a teenager at school who's been abused by domestic violence, physically or sexually? I was trying to hear the question, But I thought that might have been what she was sharing or requesting.
Okay, Fatima, if you could clarify that, and then Pat, seeing that you work with youth, could you respond to that question?
Well, teenage dating violence is on the rise, and it's just not toward the female, it's also toward the male. So we have a memorandum of understanding that we work with the high schools that they must be reported. But unfortunately for us, the reason why it's so strong, this policy we have, and why schools are adapting it is because a couple of years ago in one of the schools, a child had received a text from her boyfriend saying he was going to kill her. And the school administrator, when she showed it to the security guard, the teachers, and her classmates, they all kind of laughed it off. And that night he came by her house and he literally knocked the door and he killed her and then killed himself. And that just sent a whole wave across the whole community and county saying, hey, we got to change our in-house policies. And the policy should be in the school that the child who's been abused should be able to report it to the principal. And there should be disciplinary action. They should be reported to the youth court. There in Washington County Youth Court, they have at least 12% of all their crimes, some of them are domestic violence related, and they have about 500 people or so within the juvenile system. And that's because it's been reported to the juvenile system. So there is a chain of command. If it's domestic violence, it's not necessarily the Department of Human Services, but it is law enforcement, and it will be dealt with in the youth court in regards to handling what was happening in the form of a dating relationship. So it's just not acceptable. Yes.
Yeah. I was going to say that we found out what the issue was, and Norma's back on the line and can clarify her question.
Good.
But thanks, that was a great answer. Norma?
Yes. My question
was what
was
your question again?
If you have a teenager in school that's being abused by their peers, whether physical or verbal, how do you get them to really open up to you and Don about it?
Hmm. Pat and Joanne?
The way that we do it is we provide educational information, and then our trainers are available like they're just sitting in the lunchroom. We don't put the pressure on them, but we give them the hotline number. And we give them and let them know that we're there whenever they're ready. But at no given time do we request them the volunteer to give us that information. We do in our educational training tell them where help is, and then they could call, and we assure them the number one thing that you want to do if you really want them to get open up is to assure them of confidentiality.
Yeah.
The number one concern of our teens have been, can I trust you with what I want to share? And then they're concerned about the safety of their life. The first thing for them is not their safety, is can I trust you? And that's, and you can assure them through what your confidentiality policy is, who else will find out about it, and what is the procedure. By letting them know in a larger group and not necessarily individually, you can individually in some cases, but every case is different. And that's some of the things that we do.
Well, one of the things I want to talk about, though, too, is the seriousness of the schools taking responsibility for it. And I've heard of one situation where there was a kid that was being bullied, and the parent went to the vice principal and told the story, and the vice principal didn't take it seriously. And the parent ended up telling the vice principal and the principal that they were going to sue if they didn't do anything about it. Then what happened was then they brought the law enforcement in, they brought to observe what was going on, and they took the offending young people to the principal's office to be able to, you know, confront them about it. Then the young person started to break down. But what's interesting, they didn't want to challenge this young person because they felt like this child had had a number of other incidents. But they also felt like it was going to give this person a record. Rather than looking at the child that was the victim, the parent ended up getting a call from one of the guidance counselors that praised them for confronting the school because there had been a number of other children that left the school because they had been bullied. So the thing about trying to, you know, get administrators within the school to take the issue seriously, and I think also, too, trying to have approaches that are similar to the environments that the kids are coming from. The sometimes approaches to dealing with bullying are not necessarily written for kids that live in high-stress, low-income communities. Sometimes they're sort of middle-class environments, and the approaches may not be framed to meet the needs of the kids. So sort of trying to frame it around the realities of the populations and the communities that the kids are coming from is important. And I agree with what Pat said, you know, if you can deal with confidentiality, it's something that's important. But I think also getting schools and to spend some time trying to deal with the realities of the kids that you're working with is also important. And then young women understanding what the choices are around if they're victims of domestic violence. And then young men to understand what they're doing if they're being physically abusive to young girls and that there should be a consequence. Young people are trying to figure certain things out, both young girls and young boys, when they find themselves in the situation. If we could provide some guidance around that, that's something that's, I think, important to do. Well, we've got 3 minutes left for the show, and what I wanted to do is to kick it back to Joanne and to Kat to see whether or not you have any final comments. Pat?
Oh,
okay. I was waiting.
Or Joanne, either one.
You want final comments on it?
Yeah, we've got 3 minutes left in the show. Do you have any final thoughts?
Yes, my final thought on it is the more education, from what I'm seeing in my view, the more education that the people get, whether it's on the law enforcement, inside of the church, ministers, schools, the more education and the more that they let people that deal with domestic violence in whatever area, the educational, that's what I feel is more important, that can solve a lot of situations, and that also that the family or the mother that's being abused or the woman that's being abused or the young girl that's being stalked or the young man, that they need to open up for more educational, because the more you know, the more you can understand, and that they also have a safe place, that they understand that they can come to someone and speak about what's going on, that it's not a secret anymore.
Yeah. And Pat, you have the final minute.
Oh, no, I just agree 100% with her on what she just said. Education is the key to change. So I agree with that.
Well, I really want to thank you both for being willing to be on the show and to share your knowledge and your experience in terms of looking at this issue. And Norma, thank you for your question. And we will have more discussions about domestic violence and the African American community and about faith. And if you go to the IDVAC Blog Talk Radio website, you'd be able to download the podcast with regard to this and other shows. So we really want to welcome the audience for listening to the show and being a part of it. And we will talk to you again. Listen to other shows. Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for today's show. You've been listening to IDVAC Blog Talk Radio, right here every week at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio is brought to you by the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community in collaboration with the Women of Color Network and the African American Domestic Peace Project. Visit us on the web at idvac.org to find out more information about our guests and presenters and to download podcasts of previous shows of IDVAC Blog Talk Radio. Until next week,
be safe.